Okay, well, you know what I'm going to say, so let's go ahead and do it. We are on the place of the Torah where the chapters are on even markers, so it's kind of easy. Turn with me, if you will, to beginning of chapter 19. That'd be verse 1. And it says, as many of them do, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and here's what he said. So the words in the red, speak unto Kol Edat, so all of the congregation of the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, and say unto them, all right, here come the words in red that are unique. You shall be holy. Now that in Hebrew is kodeshim. So there's the you all form of the verb to be set apart. So you shall be holy, for I, Yahuwah your Elohim, am holy. Am kadosh, am set apart. So there's the title for the portion. And what I think is interesting, and this is how I'll introduce the rest of it, he's going to tell us a whole lot about what that means. And what you're going to see is a whole lot about what that means is foreign to the whore church. And I find that somewhat, well, not just distressing, but really revealing, too. You shall fear every man his father and his mother, and you shall keep my Sabbaths. Well, there you go. Right off the bat, they're best at one for two. You shall keep my Sabbaths. Ani Yahuwah Elohekum. So he signs it as well. And his Sabbaths, by the way, is plural. So, yes, there are 52 of them in a year, but there are also others that are they're called Sabbaths in some places. Those would be the Moedim as well. Do not turn to idols, nor turn to yourselves, or make for yourselves molten gods, Maseka, Ani Yahuwah Elohim. And this is a member of the first use we see of this one is in Exodus, where the molten god that Aaron claims came out of the fire. Again, he signs it. When you offer a sacrifice of shalamim, peace offerings to Yahuwah, you shall offer it that it might be accepted. It's need to be eaten on the same day you offer it, on the morning, and if any of it remains until the third day, it needs to be burned with fire. It shall, if it's eaten at all on the third day, it is a vile thing. It's not accepted. But everyone that eats it shall bear his Torahlessness, because he has profaned the set-apart thing of Yahuwah, and that soul shall be cut off from his people. And when you reap the harvest of your land, you don't wholly reap the corners of your field, neither shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. So here's one of those things that is repeated more than once, and we see it as well with the disciples even. So it's something that was considered to be kind of de rigueur for a long, long time. But it's also, again, a provision for the poor. Likewise, you shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather the fallen fruit from your vineyard. You shall leave those for the poor and for the stranger, Ani Yahuwah Elohekim. You shall not steal, nor shall you deal falsely, nor lie to one another. And you shall not swear by my name falsely, so that you thus profane the name of your Elohim, Ani Yahuwah. You shall not oppress your neighbor, nor rob him. The wages of a hired servant shall not abide with you all night until the morning. So this is also was one standard standard procedure. But it seems to have kind of been lost. And I know people that will still do this, and we try to do it when we can. If I was to hire a day laborer, pay him the same day. You shall not curse the deaf, nor putting a stumbling block before the blind, but in fact you shall fear Elohim, Ani Yahuwah. You shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, nor shall you respect the person of the poor, nor favor the person of the mighty. So what they're worth doesn't enter into the factor. It's a matter of what's right and what's wrong, period. In righteousness you shall judge your neighbor. You shall not go up and down as a talebearer among your people, nor shall you stand idly by the blood of your neighbor, Ani Yahuwah. Now, this is a sequence, and I encourage you, highlight this section, because here's another element of things that are so important and also, so overlooked in so many places. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. Well, what does that mean, right? Love your neighbor. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. Here you go. He's going to tell us, surely you will rebuke your neighbor and not bear sin because of him. So this is a series of what are sometimes called positive commands. You do not stand idly by the blood of your neighbor when something bad happens to them. I mean, think Waco and so many other places where people have literally just watched others be sacrificed, slaughtered, whatever the case may be. But when he does wrong, you call him out for it. Don't bear sin because of him. You shall not take vengeance, though, nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself, Ani Yahuwah. So here, of course, is one of those things that Yeshua pointed out. After you shall love Yahuwah your El with all your heart and might and soul, and then what's the second greatest commandment? Here's the one he pointed to. Love your neighbor as yourself. Now, how do we do that? Answer, he's telling us in this segment. And that's the part that I think gets overlooked. Oh, that means if he's gay, you have to love him. You have to love every... No, that ain't the thing that's being talked about here. You're to be set apart, and he's telling us how. And here's one other example. You shall keep my statutes. Hukoti. You shall not let your cattle gender with a diverse kind. So basically, there's several statutes here that have to do with interbreeding and how it's not to happen. I can't help but think that probably also goes for DNA modification and developing, you know, new bioweapons like a human-to-human transmissible version of a hantavirus. Don't know why that's on my mind, but there you go. You shall not sow your field with two kinds of seed, nor shall there come upon you a garment of two kinds of stuff mingled together. Normally that's thought to be wool and flax, but I guess there are probably all kinds of other stuff nowadays that might be a problem. Whoever lies carnally with a woman, okay? So somebody takes a bond maid who's designated for a man. In other words, she's already betrothed to somebody as a bondservant. Not at all been redeemed, nor has freedom given to her. Well, there needs to be an inquiry. They shall not be put to death, however, because she was not free. And the man who done this thing, he shall bring his forfeit unto Yahuwah, the door of the tent of meeting, a ram for a guilt offering. The priest makes atonement for him with the ram of the guilt offering before Yahuwah, that sin for which he sinned, and he shall be forgiven for the sin which he has sinned. Now, this is interesting because it's one of the few places where we do not see adultery because she was a bondservant. Seems to be the only difference here, and I always found that fascinating, where it's not punishable by death. When you come into the land and have planted all manner of trees for food, then you count the fruit thereof as forbidden. For 3 years it's forbidden to you. Then it shall not be eaten. In the fourth year, all the fruit of that tree is to be set apart for giving praise unto Yahuwah. But in the fifth year, so when the tree enters its fifth year, you can eat all the fruit thereof, that it may yield unto you all the more richly the increase thereof, Ani Yahuwah Elohecham. You shall not eat with the blood, nor shall you practice divination, nor soothsaying. Now, what I think is fascinating here, and if you look at the root of this word, you shall not practice divination. The word is te nakashu. So that's the you-all form of the verb. But do you recognize the root that's in there? It's nakash. That's the same thing that was the, not a serpent so much, but some entity that's reptile-like, reptilian. We don't exactly know what it is because it got changed after that. But whatever this nakash is, this has become a verb, practice divination. I think that's fascinating because it shows us the very root of where this comes from. You shall not round the corners of your heads, nor shall you mar the corners of your beard. People scratch their heads over that one. I'm probably among them. But the next one's easy, and the next one is more ignored, arguably, than the first one. You shall not make cuttings in your flesh for the dead. Well, of course, as we know, cutting has become a major epidemic among young people, high schoolers, for probably 20 years or more at this point. As far as I know, it's still a big problem. Nor, now this is the one that is going to really raise some hackles, nor shall you imprint any marks upon you, Ani Yahuwah. Do not tattoo yourselves. And, of course, that is one of those, I don't care if it's a cross. Well, maybe that would make it all the more pagan. I'm not sure. But it's pretty clear, and it's unequivocal, and it didn't change. Remember, Yahushua says he's not changing one iota or tittle. So I've always thought that one was interesting. This next one is kind of sort of two, and maybe it's related. Do not profane your daughter to make her a harlot, lest the land fall into harlotry, and the land become full of lewdness. You shall keep my Sabbaths, reverence my sanctuary, Ani Yahuwah. Notice how much of this are things that are literally falling into major disfavor today. And that would include, I guess, not teaching your daughters to maintain their virginity. You know, I guess a dinner and a movie, does that constitute a whoring? For when, I will let the fathers make that choice, but I'm going to suggest that they're going to be held responsible for whatever choice they make. Do not turn unto ghosts or wizards. Several words here there. Sometimes you'll see it translated. Obote is one of the nouns here. Are unto familiar spirits. Do not seek them out to be defiled by them. Ani Yehuah Elohim. Notice how so many of these are signed, so that he's real clear about it. You shall rise up before the hoary head and honor the face of the old man, and you shall fear Yahuwah, Ani Yahuwah Elohim. Just Ani Yahuwah in this case, sorry. And if there is a stranger who happens to be sojourning with you in your land, well, you shall not do him wrong. Now, sojourning is an interesting word here, because sojourning has the implication that he's going to walk in obedience. That's why there's one Torah for you and the stranger that sojourns among you. That stranger that does sojourn with you shall be unto you as the homeborn among you. So for good or for ill, when he's part of the camp, he's part of the camp. He gets treated the same way. He's subject to the same ordinances and statutes and judgments. And you shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Ani Yehuah Elohim. You shall do no unrighteousness, not in meter yard, in weight, or in measure. And here's one of several places in the Torah. Remember, I've mentioned this many times, and at least half a dozen places, easy to find, actually there's more than that, in Proverbs, where dishonest weights and other things that are dishonest, like in meter yard or in measure, the measure of how much barley, for example, is in an omer and so forth, those are called abominations, dishonest weights. Just balances, he says, just weights, a just ephah, a just hin, you shall have. Ani Yehuah Elohim, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. We're going to see the same thing again in Deuteronomy chapter 25. You shall observe all of my statutes and all my ordinances and do them. Ani Yehuah. The parsha is called Kedoshim, be set apart. And then the first chapter is all about elements that make that up. So many of them, again, have been ignored. It continues, and Yehoshua spoke to Moshe, and he said, moreover, so it's a continuation, you shall say to the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, whoever he is of the B'nai Israel, or of the strangers that sojourn in Israel, that gives of his seed to Molech, he shall surely be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones. Now, this one's interesting because, obviously, we got a whole lot of, let's just say, sacrifices to Molech. It's kind of like a sacrament, right? The abortion sacrament paid for with your tax dollars at work. So many other things that are similar. And what I think is interesting here, and it's worth pointing out, it says, when you are in the land. So it does seem like it is specific to the land where you stone people that are offering sacrifices to fake gods. I will also set my face against that man. I'll cut him off from among his people, because he's given of his seed to Molech, and he's defiled my sanctuary and profaned my holy name. If the people of the land do at all hide their eyes from that man, in other words, if they don't pay attention, they don't do what's supposed to be done, and when he gives of his seed unto Molech and do not put him to death, then I'll set my face against that man and against his family, and I will cut him off and all that go astray after him to go astray after Molech from among their people. And of course, we saw that this did in fact happen. But it's ironic that now that we're in a different land, having been kicked out for reasons like that, what do we see? Again, Molech, the sacrifice, abortion, and other things, they are a sacrament. Whether people want to admit it or not, that's basically what it is. Remember, when you have a Supreme Court justice and you don't ask him, hey, how about the Second Amendment to the Constitution? How about the First Amendment? No, we don't care about that. But the sacrament of abortion? Oh, baby, if you don't sign up for that one, dude, you're not going to sit on this high court and get to wear that black robe. The soul that turns to ghosts or familiar spirits and goes astray after them, I will even set my face against that soul and cut him off from among his people. So, set yourselves apart, therefore, sanctify yourselves, and be kadosh for Ani Yehuah Elohim. And keep my statutes and do them. Ani Yehuah, I am Yehuah who sanctifies you. For whatsoever man there is that curses his father and his mother shall surely be put to death. Now, it starts out with that in this Torah portion, remember? That is one of the first things it says, if not the first. Every man shall fear his father and his mother. And then it says here, if there is someone who curses his father or his mother, they are deserving of death. He's cursed his father or his mother. His blood shall be upon him. Now, the man that commits adultery with another man's wife. And what we're going to see next is a whole series of things. We're going to see that there's a lot of overlap with about two chapters back, things that are sexual sins of various kinds, incest and sodomy and bestiality and others, and adultery certainly among them. And it's going to start off, and this time what we're going to get are the punishments that go with these various sexual sins. So if a man commits adultery with some other man's wife, the man that commits adultery with his neighbor's wife, both the adulterer and the adulteress, so it takes two to tango, both of them shall surely be put to death. Now the man lies with his father's wife, he's uncovered his father's nakedness, both of them shall surely be put to death, their blood shall be upon him. If a man lies with his daughter-in-law, both of them shall surely be put to death, they have wrought corruption, their blood shall be upon them. If a man lies with mankind as with womankind, this is the second time we've seen it again, he commits an act which is supposed to be done with a woman, but nope, we're doing it with a man, both of them have committed abomination. So again, this is tawiba, it's the strongest word in the Hebrew language, and they shall surely be put to death, their blood shall be upon them. And as you note, this is now another sacrament, and homosexuality has been elevated. It's taught in the public schools. It's subsidized. We have it as a State Department goal, although that has slightly been reversed, not nearly to the extent that it needs to be. But what I think is worth pointing out here is, as opposed to being a death penalty, this is taught. Again, this is taught in the public cesspools. How dare you speak out against someone when, in fact, what you should be doing, well, is worse than that. Let me just put it that way. If a man takes his wife and also her mother. So if a man literally lies with a daughter and a mother, it is wickedness. They shall be burnt with fire, both he and they, so that there is no wickedness among you. Now, if a man lies with a beast, here's another reference to the bestiality thing, he shall surely be put to death, and you will slay the beast. Unless there be any doubt, because the male gender is used for both sexes, this is the Creator making clear it also applies to women. Okay, now a man lying with a man as with a woman is a death penalty, but it's a man. This says if a man or a woman lies with a beast, then they are both going to die. So if a woman approaches unto any beast and lies down to that one, you shall kill the woman and the beast. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them. Now on to the incest sections. If a man shall take his sister, his father's daughter, or his mother's daughter. So if it's a half-sister or a full-sister, through either of the wives or multiples that the father may have, in other words, doesn't matter how the deed is done, there is a problem here. If he sees her nakedness and she sees his nakedness, it's a shameful thing. They shall be cut off in the sight of the children of their people. He has uncovered his sister's nakedness. He shall bear his Torahlessness. Now, if a man shall lie with a woman during the time of her nidah, her menstrual time, and uncovers her nakedness, he has made naked her fountain. She's uncovered the fountain of her blood. Both of them shall be cut off from among their people. So this is a serious issue, and certainly something that I think a lot of people that are, especially newlyweds and those that are returning to the Torah, are sometimes, this one is a little bit different. I'm not going to worry about incest, but this sounds like something that we need to be paying attention to. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your mother's sister, nor your father's sister, in other words, your aunt, for he has made naked his near kin. They shall bear their Torahlessness. If a man shall lie with his uncle's wife, he's uncovered his uncle's nakedness, they shall bear their sin, they shall die childless. Now, what's interesting about this is, notice, this is an addition, too, because if you think about it, if the uncle is still alive, then this is adultery, and there is a worse penalty, and that is that they'll both die. So I think one of the things you can probably conclude here is that there are some of these commandments that are given that would apply even after the person is no longer his uncle's wife. Maybe he's passed, but it still seems to apply. Now, there may be other explanations. I'm not sure if I can think of any. But again, adultery is already punishable. So you have to look at these and say, well, this is an additional but a different kind of adultery. What are we talking about? Now, if a man shall take his brother's wife, okay, here you go, it is impurity. He's uncovered his brother's nakedness. They shall be childless. Now, there's a certain irony here, as you know. Again, same thing applies. It's not while the brother is alive. This would be after the brother has died, it would seem. But remember, there's also the law of the levirate, where it could be a requirement. If the brother has died childless, that's a different situation. And ironically, notice what the penalty is here. If he does it, and it's not to give an heir, then they shall, in fact, be childless. So there's a certain symmetry in this, as well as a bit of irony. You shall therefore keep all my statutes, hukoti, and all my ordinances, and do them, that the land where I bring you in to dwell does not vomit you out. So all of these things explicitly, and I think this applies to the death penalty. It's still an abomination, wherever the bestiality or the sodomy or whatever it may be occurs. But in terms of the death penalties and so forth, those are explicitly in the land. You shall not walk in the customs of the nation which I am casting out before you. They did all of these things. Therefore, I abhorred them. But I have said unto you, you shall inherit their land, and I will give it to you to possess it, a land flowing with milk and honey, Anihu, your El, who has set you apart from the peoples. You shall therefore... So here we're starting to wrap up the entire portion. You shall therefore separate. And in this case, we're looking back a couple of portions, right? We know what's clean and unclean. This is what the priests were supposed to teach, the difference between the holy, the profane, the clean and the unclean, including food. So separate between the clean beast and the unclean, between the unclean fowl and the clean. In other words, what's food and what's not. And you shall not make your soul's nephshim detestable by beast or by fowl or by anything that the ground teems with, which I have set apart for you to hold unclean. So without going into a lot of detail, we may talk about this tomorrow, because this is one of those things that is very revealing when it comes to so many of the questions that are raised in here. When did they pass away? They did not. We know that. Heaven and earth still exist. So what happened? Answer. A lot of things seem to be returning to the very same kinds of, crap inherited from the paganism in the land that got people kicked out, and that's where we are today to begin with. What does he say? In conclusion, you shall be set apart holy, kedoshim, y'all, unto me. For I, Yahuwah, am kadosh, and I have set you apart from the peoples that you should be mine. A man or a woman also that divines by a ghost or a familiar spirit or a wizard, in other words, any of those pagan and arguably kind of occult things we would say nowadays, shall surely be put to death. You shall stone them with stones. Their blood shall be upon them.